Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends, and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives, or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Every culture on earth has a way of marking the transition from child to adult. These rites of passage shape identity, strengthen communities, and pass on important values. This week on What We Teach Our Children, I'm joined by Angela White. With Maori and Scottish heritage and a lifelong commitment to education, Angela is reimagining rites of passage for today's schools, helping adolescents, teachers, and communities navigate change with purpose. Her career has been dedicated to empowering teachers, fostering innovation, and driving positive change in education. Angela has been a catalyst for equality and relational teaching. Now, in her role as Chief Operating Officer of The Right Journey, Angela brings her passion and vision to the universal human tradition of rites of passage. Angela, welcome. With your rich cultural background, how have you been able to implement what you were taught in your own life over the years?
So much of those traditional cultural aspects that come through family life are just embedded in what you do. But in my teaching profession, that has meant that I've taught things slightly differently from a different perspective. And it has meant, integrating in cultural awareness into everything I do with the students. And, that connection to land, their connection as well, everybody's connection to the land and our own ancestors is so important. But it's just meant that I've had an empathy and understanding, especially in New Zealand, because in New Zealand, it's quite different. Teaching Māori language is compulsory in all schools. We have a treaty under which all schools are governed, the Treaty of Waitangi. So it is quite different because there's that expectation. It's just really woven into everything I do, who I am and how I teach, and definitely is the main reason why I now work in the area of rites of passage.
How do you see what's happening in Australia, given your background in New Zealand, and what do you think we could be doing about it?
That's a really big question, and I wish I had the answer to that. It is very different comparatively because of the treaty. That treaty is a legal document and it's upheld. And so that just makes everything that falls down under it, bilingual signage in schools, for example, is compulsory. And so that comes through and, schools don't get funding unless they do it. So it's just a compulsory given. And so operating under that is just very normalised in New Zealand and also in the teacher training that we receive. So it's just an incredibly different system to be in a country where that's not the case and not compulsory. That then leaves it in the hands of individuals as to how they want to do it. And that varies so much throughout Australia as, my work sort of is national. So it varies so much.
As someone who was born in Australia from people who came to this country from England, for instance, in my father's line, I feel like we've disconnected from any cultural connection we may have had, and we've had to establish our own here in Australia, but it's so diverse. And diversity and inclusion has become more a catchphrase in this country. How have you been able to, from your connection to cultural background, be so inclusive of diversity in everything you do?
Well, it just gives you, straight off the bat, it gives you an empathy and understanding for all cultures. You know, and everybody has history and everybody has stories and traditions, and it's an honour really to understand them and incorporate those into, you know, teaching and the programs that I work, you know, in the schools that I work with. And everybody has, like, as you said, my granddad was Scottish, and, you know, connecting to that Scottish heritage for me is really important as well. And we forget that there are myths and legends and stories and fables and cultural richness that comes from Scotland and England as well. And, you know, that's a very beautiful thing to connect to.
One of the things I noticed about what you've been doing from teaching, you've moved into the right journey, which is all about rites of passage. It's something we seem to have forgotten culturally, you know, as humanity. Why did you want to be a part of that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And all my teaching was done in girls' schools. So I guess I kind of accidentally started specialising in girls' education. And so we, as a school, we brought the right journey in. I was the head of middle school, and we brought the right journey into the school for our girls, because what we found was that we wanted something that marks the transition from, you know, child to adult, like something that would, you know, celebrate and cause us to be purposeful about that transition going from child to adult. Because every culture on earth has something that they do that marks that moment. And so we, you know, when I was at the school, we thought, well, what could we do? What can we be doing that's contemporary, that fits in with our own culture and heritage of our school, and makes sense to us and our students? And that's when I discovered the right journey. And the right journey, yeah, really allowed us the freedom to be able to make it align with the values of the school, but also had a very concise framework that could help us make sure that we were hitting on the key elements of what a rite of passage is.
For some people listening, they may not understand what a rite of passage is. So how did you actually implement something that was meaningful to an all-girls school particularly?
So there's a lot of research on it. Many people have looked into what rites of passage are and what they do, but there's essentially three elements to a rite of passage, and that is kind of removing away from the norm. So you might think about other cultures that we know about where the young adolescents would be taken away. So you go away from the norm, and then some kind of transformation happens, and then you come back and you reintegrate that new learning back into the norm again. And so with that framework and with the right journey, we looked at our students and thought, well, how can we move for this year, do something different, something that looks different and feels different, have some conversations in there and be guided and ushered by the adults. And then in year 10, we then come back in and integrate that new learning into our learning. And so the right journey does that very purposefully based on the hero's journey. So the hero's journey is an archetypical journey that a lot of people know about. Many, you know, books and movies are based on the hero's journey, Star Wars, for example, and Harry Potter, etc. And it starts off with a calling. So we're all on these journeys ourselves, personally and professionally. Throughout life, you hear callings. It might be a call to move to another city, to get a different job, to do some study. You know, we just sort of start to feel this, hear a calling, and we don't heed every call, and there might be a refusal of the call. But at some point, sometimes we say, no, I'm going to heed that call and I'm going to do that thing. Then it's a departure. So there's a calling and then a departure, and you actually leave to go on this journey. So what the right journey and what we were trying to achieve at the school I was at was to have this purposefully happening in year 9 for the girls, and have that guided by the adults in the community, so the teachers. So that the teachers are calling, you know, the school's calling the shots. This is what we're wanting, the school and the parents actually. We're saying this is the moment. We want to do this, and these are the conversations we want to have around it. Because if we don't do that, young people will initiate themselves into adulthood. And that's might have all the elements of a rite of passage, but it may not always be healthy or safe. So, for example, schoolies in the Gold Coast, that has all the elements of rite of passage. You go away, you do a whole bunch of things that you see adults doing, you copy adults, you know, in that case, it's drinking and whatever else. And then something happens and then you come back. When I say something happens, like, you know, they're experiencing things, you know, mimicking adulthood. And then they come back and then they feel like they're an adult. Or it might be home driving, it might be alcohol, it might be, you know, all sorts of things. But they will initiate themselves unless the adults in the community choose to do that purposely for them.
That's our role. You know, when it was a village, now it's a community, but we seem so disconnected from all of these things about ourselves and about life in general. I can see where that would work, because even when we go from being a maiden to a mother and a mother to a crone, you know, they're rites of passage as well. But if they're not led in a way that honours and respects that rite of passage, you may miss the mark. And I can see where schoolies is missing the mark, because it's peer-led. And it's funny looking back in history, you know, where do you think we started to detour from these traditional archetypes?
I don't know. And that's a really good question. And of course, there are many countries around the world who still do rites of passage with their young people. You know, they realise that if we don't do something with our teenagers, there's potential that they could do something dangerous or just be crappy adults. So we want to do something that marks the moment, that has the deep conversations that we feel are important with them, and then celebrates them and brings them back into the community as a different person, like, and really honours them and gives them the opportunity to sort of say, what sort of man do you want to be? What sort of woman do you want to be? And it's interesting with girls that, you know, our bodies, you mentioned the maiden and the crone, and our bodies as girls and women, our bodies initiate us. So from child to adult, we have a moment when you get your first period. Menstruation marks that moment for girls. And then again, at the other end, when we go from adult to elder. We also don't do adult to elder in our culture either very much. You know, elders are often, you know, when you get older, we become invisible. It's not really celebrated. Youth is celebrated. But there are many cultures too that would celebrate going from adult to elder. And for girls, our bodies do that. And it does cause you to move into responsibility, because there's a management involved in that. But for boys, they don't have that. So that's why you often hear a lot more about boys' rites of passage. Because, you know, if the men don't do that with the boys, their bodies don't initiate them either, and you could become a perpetual child, 40-year-old boy in a boardroom.
We're seeing that playing out in worldwide politics at the moment. I saw an analogy about that the other day I found quite interesting, and it looks at, you know, the child and the adult, and maybe that's what we're actually missing, are these rites of passage where we actually honour the things that we leave behind as well as the new things we adopt. Given your cultural background and then the rites of passage you've experienced in education, how do you think that influenced the way you raised your own daughter?
Oh, yeah, that's a really good question. I don't think, you know, my cultural heritage really prepared me well for the rite of passage from child to adult for her, because, you know, over time you become removed from those, you know, sort of traditional things that happen. So it was really my work with The Right Journey, to be honest, that caused me to think as a parent, because The Right Journey works very closely with parents. So that caused me to think, you know, what am I doing for her to mark this time? And there's so many things within The Right Journey that gave me kind of a framework to make that our own, which included things like talking to her about becoming an adult, talking to her about what sort of woman does she want to be, and then looking at lots of different types of women, types of ways of being a woman, and then so that she can widen her understanding, because, you know, growing up, she's got me as a mother, and then she's got, you know, grandparents and aunties and so on, and then a teacher at school probably. But, you know, The Right Journey really sort of seeks to widen that a little bit and go, well, what other ways are there to be a woman? Let's look at other people too. And so part of that for me was having other people in her life write her a letter saying, these are the things I've learned about becoming a woman over the years. If I could tell you one thing, I'd like to say this. And it's a very beautiful thing to, at the end of her sort of year, really, of me implementing things for her, reading those letters. And I know she keeps those even now. I think it was probably the right journey that gave me that framework, to be honest, and made me realise as a parent that there's so much more I could have done for her, but that's what I did with her. Yeah, there's actually seven stages for the right journey. There's the calling and the departure. So they take these students through this throughout the year. The teachers do. So we train the teachers, and then the teachers in the school actually run it. The calling and the departure, they go off on their journey. And then there's challenges. So there's a series of challenges the school creates for them, which is intended to have some kind of level of failure involved, which is quite a different thing for schools to do because we're about success. But to experience failure with a low stakes activity, like, for example, knitting, then we can have the conversation. What happened to you when you failed? Like, did you cry? Did you throw the knitting away? Did you text your mum? What did you do? What did it feel like in your body? Because we want them to experience that within the low stakes activity, so that we don't want the very first time they experience failure to be a high stakes thing later on in life, which floors them. And they've got no strategies or understanding of what to do with that feeling. The challenges are part of the program. And then there's a big challenge called the abyss, which is often a 24-hour solo where you sit with yourself, quite a big challenge for young people. And then there's the return and the homecoming. So the return is the return to themselves. What have you learned over the year? And then the homecoming is where the community, parents and mentors and so on, welcome them back in with some kind of celebration, which often looks like a prize giving or something at school where they might get a badge or their blazer or whatever it is. And then the next year, we feel they're in a bit more better stead to be taking those first steps into adulthood and at least have had some of the conversations.
Over the years you've been involved, what kind of feedback have you had about, people who've adopted these approaches and from the students and teachers?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's transformational. It comes at a time in schools where parents often feel a little bit removed from their kids. They've had this great primary school thing where the child's been amazing, and then they get to young adolescence and it's like they turn into this person that doesn't want to talk to them. Their peers mean more to them than anything else. They're interested in social media. It's just, becomes a really tricky time, and then that's exactly sort of where the right journey comes in. And then the schools then have the conversation with you. We're here to support you and your parenting. These are some of the things we're going to be doing at school. This is how you can also support it at home or do more with it at home if you want. The feedback's been pretty amazing. The teachers that teach it say that it transforms their practice. They say that it's the subject they really enjoy teaching. And the parents are so grateful to have this moment where they get some say and some input, and we can share that with them. There is a gratitude letter at the start of the year where the students write a gratitude letter to their parents, thanking them, and the parents write one to them saying what it's been like through childhood. Because as you said, there is an element of letting go as well, letting go of some childish behaviours. And so that's a very beautiful time. And parents often say that that just comes at the right moment where they were feeling disconnected. And so, yeah, we do have a lot of feedback. We try and put that on our website and social media and so on. We try to share some of that feedback with people because it is very often very moving.
It sounds like it is. And even just me reflecting on, my journey as a single parent with two children and how great that would have been to have that type of formal process. Schools seem to be so much more responsible for so much more these days. They're not really preparing them in another aspect of life, and that's the digital world. We've given these kids devices. Even schools have adopted computers and laptops and tablets, and yet we're not teaching them how to be responsible and how to transition into treating that as an adult. Where do you think it ends? You know, how much more will schools be actually responsible for?
That's a good question. The Right Journey is conversational, so it's a series of conversations, and some of those are around social media and influencers, and actually really having the conversation of why are people influential? Why are online influencers so powerful? Who are influencers that you know of in real life? Would they be maybe more important than ones that are online? There's so much that schools are responsible for. There's two sort of things. There's the IT, which, you know, obviously is computers and tablets and so on, which is a delivery device. But then there's social media, which is quite different. And social media, those new laws are coming in October this year to Australia, where you need to prove your age, and 16 is the age. So how robust that way of verifying your age is up to the platforms. But I know in the UK that they have changed the age for access to porn, and that has, I think it said something like a 37% decrease in the number of people using it. I don't know, but it seemed quite a lot. So I think that the systems that platforms have to check age verification are pretty robust. So hopefully in Australia, that where Instagram, for example, and TikTok, you have to actually prove with a birth certificate your age. And if you're not 16, then you won't be allowed on it. Because brain research tells us prefrontal cortex is nowhere near developed. Girls until early 20s and boys until late 20s. So having social media where you can compare yourself to others is anxiety inducing, as we know. Yeah, we're very supportive of social media at least not being a part of young people's lives.
Me too. Angela White, it has been phenomenal getting to know you. Thank you so much for joining me in conversation on what we teach our children.
My pleasure. Thanks so much, Kim.
Chief Operating Officer of The Right Journey, Angela White, who advocates for rites of passage to mark the transition from child to adult. If you'd like to learn more about The Right Journey or Angela's work, you'll find all the right links in the show notes. To connect with me, go to my website, kimkleiden.com. That's kimkleiden.com. Or search for me on LinkedIn and Instagram. You can also follow What We Teach Our Children on Facebook and Instagram. Until next week, remember, the change you want to see in the world starts with you.